When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And welcome to another episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the book. Something that I wrote last year. It covered my highs and lows, basically, of being a mum. It was a very honest account. And once I'd finished that, once it was published, I wanted that conversation to continue. So last year, I launched the podcast. We're now on the second series. And today's guest, well, it's a bit of a different guest for a start. It's a man. I mean, you can hear the breathing probably. That was a definite male sniff. But he's also, he's just got a very different job to anyone that I know. Today's guest is a survival expert, a TV presenter, an ex-elite forces
operator.
Yay. And a dad of five. It's Ant Middleton.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Dad of five. That's a lot of kids.
Yeah, I started young and I just love kids. What people don't realise with me is that kids are like my kryptonite.
Yeah.
I love kids. And my eldest is 16 and my youngest is one. So I've got quite a wide range there. So
is that good though? Do the older ones help out?
Yeah, they're excellent. You know, we've got a very strong family unit bond. So I've got a 16-year-old who lives with his mum in Portsmouth from a previous relationship.
Right.
So he's pretty grown up and he just comes and goes as he pleases. And with my wife now, Emily, I've got a 10-year-old daughter, an 8-year-old son, a 2-year-old daughter and a 1-year-old son. So I've got boy, girl, boy, girl, boy. I pre-ordered them. So I was lucky.
That was pretty special. Mm-hmm. And are you done or you're growing more?
No, I'm done. I would have a couple more, but, you know, I think I've put my wife through the mill. We've got a lovely little family going on. And
it seems that way on your Instagram as well, because you're so lovely in how you post about them. I saw your post the other day about kissing your little one.
Every photo is
a kiss.
I love my kids. You know, it's one of those where that's my downtime. That's what relaxes me. That's where I'm at peace, really, is when I'm at home and I've got the kids climbing all over me, because it just takes my mind off of everything. I focus on their innocence and on them as children and trying to provide and give them the best opportunities in life that I can, even though they're young, you know, and all they need at this stage is love and attention. Mm. Thinking about how I grew up, I just want to be able to give them a lot more options than I had, put it that way.
Yeah, and you knew pretty young that you wanted to go into the armed forces, right?
Yeah, I sort of knew from the age of 14, and I was quite a hyper-competitive child, you know, so I always wanted that challenge, but I always wanted to be self-sufficient. I wanted to stand on my own 2 feet. I wanted to be on my own, even though I come from one of six.
Oh, wow, so you're from a big family anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So that's why kids, I'm lost like kids. But, yeah, I wanted to sort of pull away from that large family sort of mould and try and make something of myself. So yeah. I joined the army at the age of 16.
Gosh. I can't. For your mum, that must have been such a terrifying prospect.
Well, when I look at 16-year-olds now...
Well, you've got a 16-year-old.
Yes,
so
exactly.
So if your 16-year-old son turned around to you now, like, what would you... How do you feel?
You know, I work hard so I can give them options, but ultimately, if that's what he wanted to do, then I would coach him and make sure that he went down the right avenues. I wouldn't necessarily push him into it, but listen, if he wants to do it, then I'll support him.
That's just such a tough thing.
Would I really though?
That's the thing, because I think it's one thing putting yourself in those situations and having put yourself in those situations before, but knowing what your son is potentially putting himself into that position, or daughter, you know, either way.
Yeah, and I wouldn't like to see my son exposed to what I've seen and done. But it's one of those, you know, I'd be a hypocrite if I said no. I'd, you know, all my children are active. They're all adventurous. They all like to drive me crazy and drag me here, there and everywhere. So very much like myself as a kid.
Yeah.
So I can relate to that. And I suppose it's just getting out there and finding your own feet, you know, figuring it out for yourself. I suppose those late teenage years, they sort of want to separate themselves like I did.
Yeah.
Find their own feet and then maybe come back later on in their early 20s and go, you know what, Dad, maybe you can help me out a bit now.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
And you were talking about them being adventurous and stuff. When you are here, because you do go away for a long period of time, but when you're here, are you setting them challenges? Are you camping in the garden? What do you do?
I'm not doing a SAS Who Dares Wins at home. That's
with the one-year-old.
Because they're the ones that are running me ragged. You know, if anything, I'm one of the recruits. Yeah, we get out and about quite a lot. We're not this sort of PlayStation or Xbox generation. It's one of those anyway. They let me know. They drive me crazy in the house, and before I know it, I'm in the woods making a den, or I've got my brand new trainers that I've bought are covered in mud, and they keep me on my toes. But I like to get them out, and I like to just stimulate their minds, let them know, give them as much experience as I can about life and about what's out there. And it's a shame nowadays you look at the modern day sort of child and, you don't find much on wildlife or on trees, and it's all about technology, computers. Oh. It saddens me that happens. So I just try and keep the raw basics of life, the old survival instincts, going out with your survival handbook like I used to do and building bow and arrows and spears and playing in the woods. I think that's forgotten. That's overseen far too much nowadays. Yeah. So I try to install as much as that as I can in them.
Because there's always a balance, isn't there? Because you kind of want them to have that, know what that technology side is.
Sure.
That technology. Because you don't want them to go to school and be behind or everyone else be doing it. But at the same time, you want them to just enjoy the things that...
Yeah, the raw basics of life,
what
right?
Makes life.
It's exactly that. I want them to keep current and move with the times. But I don't want them to forget the basics of life, just down to that raw, sort of gritty survival and just the bare basics, even down to
swimming. You are teaching them survival
like
instincts.
Yeah, I like to just sort of, when I take them out, for example, if I'm going to a water park or to Disneyland or wherever it may be, the first thing I make sure that they do is identify a prominent reference point. Kids, if you get lost, you make your way back to this reference point. There might be a big dome with something on top of it, and halfway through the day I say, where's the dome? And they look around and go, there, right, where do you need to go? Right, I need to stand at the bottom of that dome at the entrance, and if we ever become separated, I'll come and find you. So I'm always
aware,
and I think it's very important. And I said it to someone the other day, we were out snowboarding. I was snowboarding with my son, who's 8 years old. And at the bottom of the slope, there was this big pub where everyone partied, but had a massive red heart on it.
Right.
And I wouldn't really tell them to go to a pub, but it was so prominent. You could see it at the top of the slope. So I said, if we get separated or you fall or whatever it may be, just go to that heart. Go to the heart and I will find you. So the moment I find, I see that you're separated from me, just go there, wait there, because I will be there. So it's just little things like that. And my pal who's with me is like, wow. And, I'd never never think about saying anything like that. But you never know what will happen. I could be out of control and go zooming down that hill, get separated from my son.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, right, where are we meeting? At the Red Love Heart.
Oh, so, I love that. And you've got really little ones, 1 and 2.
Yes, correct.
And am I right in thinking that when you were filming, you booked to come back on a due date, Aunt? Is that right?
Yes. Can you hear me?
It's out there.
That is true.
How did your wife feel? How did you feel knowing that this was going to be... I know you're one that's, you do these things for your family and it's a massive opportunity. Mm-hmm. But that, how much communication was there? Did you know if you'd already had the baby? What was going through your head when you were out there for that 3 months?
When this commission came up... She wasn't yet pregnant.
Right.
When the commission dates came in, I knew that I'd be leaving when she was 7 months pregnant.
Oh.
And I knew that I'd have no contact with her whatsoever because we had to keep it authentic.
Yeah.
We were reenacting the Mutiny on the Bounty from 1789. So back then they had no technology. So we kept it as authentic as possible. But we were due to do it in 6 weeks. So it gave me a 2 week buffer.
Right.
I was like, don't worry about it. I'll be back. And my wife could see that I was excited. She's like, just go and do what you need to do, go off and play. I was like an excited kid, can I do it? She's like, yes, go. But we ended up taking 8 weeks to do it. So as I hit the beach that morning. Obviously, I got straight on the phone to her, and I think through gritted teeth, she was like, "You do realise it's my due date?" And I was like,
"So you hadn't even been able to tell her that you were going
to
be 2 weeks?"
No, I spoke to her for 2 months.
Oh my gosh!
So I didn't even know if she had the baby, but I was thinking to myself, "Please, please." But she was late with all the others, so obviously, I was good, right?
I don't think it worked.
So through gritted teeth, she said this, and the protocol was that we have 5 days R&R in Bali,
right?
Because we needed to unwind.
I would not be
and
that
I
wife.
Wasn't even brave
what?
Enough.
No, no,
she
no.
was like, "Obviously, you're coming home tomorrow morning, aren't you, darling?" And I was like, "Yes, darling." So I flew back the next morning, and 3 days later, Bly.
How was it being
was
on
born.
That boat, though? Cause, or any of the challenges that you do? Because I know, I mean, that one was a particularly, it must have been even strenuous for you.
Sure.
The SAS Who Dares
yeah,
Wins is more, and, yeah, it's different. How is it going through things like that, knowing that your family at home, that you can't, how can you separate it? Are you thinking about your family? Are you thinking about what you're doing? Do you have to just think about what you're doing?
I treat it like I'm out on an operation.
Right.
I treat it like I've got a job to do.
Mm.
I need to focus on that job, especially with Mutiny. It was a serious job.
Yeah.
You know, I was responsible for 8 individuals.
Looks
scary. We're on the high seas. They're unpredictable. You know, you're never going to win against Mother Nature, so you have to treat it with respect. So I sort of cut off like I did when I was on operations. I didn't let that thought process enter my mind. However, realising during the journey that I wasn't on operations and I wasn't getting
yeah.
shot at, and you know, the likelihood of me coming home was very, very high.
Yeah.
The emotions and thought process start to kick in. You start yeah. to think about your family, you start to think about your children. And it was the first time really that in a job that serious that I could really let that take control of me.
Mm.
You know, I could let that actually guide me through rather than being on operations where, you know, don't talk to me. Unless the kids are in hospital or there's an emergency, then that's the only time I need to know. Apart from that, I don't need to be distracted. And it was quite selfish of me, don't get me wrong, but is that was my way of coming home. That was
yeah.
my way of making sure that I could get home to my family by cutting them out. But with this work, it's quite nice because actually, now that I do think about them and I do let that emotional side sort of take over, it helps me out a lot. Yeah, it's my driving force and it's opened up a whole sort of lease of life for me, if I'm being completely honest. Emotions I used to think were, you know, a weakness, and you know, you shouldn't really as a man show your emotions, all this sort of macho-ness. But now I've sort of gone, not completely
have
the other way,
opened,
but
have you, the flood
you know, as you see, when I got on Mutiny, when I yeah. got on to the beach, just the thought of going home to my family, getting the men home safely to their loved ones and in one piece, you know, I let my emotions take over, and I'm glad I did, because it's something that I should be proud of, and it's something that's in there anyway. So if it's telling you to get out, and after that sort of emotional dump, you know, you feel elated, you feel,
yeah.
you know, it helps you sort of acknowledge what you've achieved and what you've done.
Yeah.
And emotion is a big part of it.
Yeah, totally.
It's like when my wife gave birth. I never cried in front of my wife ever. But when she gave birth, every single time, I found myself crying, you know, because yeah. one, you're so relieved that the baby's okay. Then you're relieved that your wife's okay. That's where the emotion comes from. And it's that everyone's okay. It's that sort of emotional dump.
Also, but doing what you do, or, you know, what you used to do as well, where you do see horrible things and it's awful. And then it comes back to this really simple thing of life
mm-hmm.
and this beauty of life and how innocent that baby is. And
of course,
and you'd do anything. And I think that moment, it just it kind of the world seems to make
it's over,
sense.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I remember when I first came off tour from Afghanistan and my daughter was born 10 days before my first tour of Afghanistan. So she was born and 10 days later I deployed to Afghanistan for 6 months. And then after 6 months I came back and I can remember literally being in a war zone and in a firefight a couple of days before. And a couple of days later I found myself playing with my daughter's dolls in her room. And my wife was just like, you know, it's so such a special moment that you can go from doing that to actually being, and I can only describe it as completely at peace.
Really?
Where I'm just there playing with a doll with my daughter that I barely know.
Mm.
But it's unconditional, isn't it? You can't really explain it. It's just like that innocence you just want to wrap up and just protect and hold forever. But you know, you just have to pass her on to mum. Yeah. And go off and do what you need to do. And I was brought up without a father, so I think that's why I'm such a compassionate father, is because, you know, I didn't have it when I was young.
Do you ever worry about what you will miss when you're not there? Is it getting harder now that you are letting that emotion
in? Yeah, it does get harder because, you know, I want to, my children are like, you know, how long are you going away for? And, you know, I remember when I went to Afghanistan for my last tour, it was more than 100 days, but the children were like, you're away for 100 days, you know. So like, that's like a million to them, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, it affects you. You think to yourself, what am I missing? You know, I grew up without a father and I don't necessarily want to be away more than I'm there.
Hmm.
They're the sacrifices that you make in life to build this family. As long as they're not permanent, then you've just got to come to terms with, actually, that's a sacrifice that I need to take during this period of time. And then after that, I'll rectify it. I'll move on to a different sacrifice or a different priority. You know, as long as that doesn't roll on
which
my whole career.
Which is so easy to do. So
of course
easy.
It is. It's just like you're working, you're enjoying your work, and then before you know it, wow, I haven't seen you for a couple of months. Yeah. And it's just like, daddy, you know, I want you home now.
Yeah. And I know there is an element of it was a job and it's what you've trained to do. But every time you went away, especially in certain trips, was there an element of you might not come back? How would you work that? Do you just switch off at that goodbye? Is it something that you don't even think about?
No, I never put that in my mindset. I always knew that I would be on that plane home.
Mm.
I always knew I'd be on that helicopter home after a mission. And that was just
the
mindset.
If it's in your mind at all, then it's
all mindset.
Yeah.
And it's all just positive thinking, you know. So I wouldn't, even if it was a day before I went on operations, I wouldn't change my family routine. It would just be as if I was going to work.
Right.
Like, goodbye, darling. Goodbye, kids.
Really?
Daddy will be home soon.
Yeah.
I didn't want to leave them with that thought process in their minds by saying, right, I've noticed a different tone in his voice. He's acting a bit strangely here. Something's not right.
Mm.
To leave them for 6 months, not fair.
Yeah.
So it's just a case of, I'm going to work. I will be home.
Mm.
Not everyone comes home. I put my hands up to that, but yeah, I was one of the fortunate ones that did.
Mm.
And that's why I wouldn't contact them that much when I was on operations. I didn't want them to hear that nervousness in my voice. Or I remember I called her one day just before I was going to go on a really, really, really big operation. It's only because I was the first man in and then we had to navigate through a minefield. And I thought, if any time's going to come, this is going to be the time. And I remember phoning her up and she was like, what's wrong? Straight away,
really?
What's wrong? And I'm like, no, just to let you know that I love you. And she's like, "Aunt, what are you doing?" You know, it's as much as I needed that clarity of mindset, she was happy that she wasn't exposed to anything. That's the way she dealt with things as well. So she'd just concentrate on the kids and what she had to do. But that was the one time, and I thought to myself, God, I've gone against my own rules here, you know. And
well, I guess that sort of shows you that there's a reason why you had those rules and keep them there.
They've been my driving force, as you well know, being a parent. You know, my wife and my children are the reason why I want to come home, why I'm not reckless, why I'm, you know, I do the things that I do, is because ultimately it's all for them, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
One thing I am interested about is the transition period of you coming home. Because I've got friends who are actors and they go off for a couple of months, and they might have Skype or things like that, and they still get to see their kids. But when they come back, there's still a period where the kids are on shore. Everyone's sort of learning their feet. Like I have it if Tom's away for like 3 weeks. You're all kind of learning how to be together again. What's that like when there's no communication?
Just exactly the same.
Really?
You know, I come home, I ruin her routine. The kids can
do
what they want. I know. She's like, will you just go back to work? But no, I'm glad to hear that, because that's what happens at home.
Yeah.
For those 2-3 weeks, it's chaos. You know, Emily's out of her routine. The house is a mess. The kids are just doing what they want to do. They're knackered because I'm letting them stay up because daddy's home.
And it's meant to be easier because daddy's
home. I know. Everyone's looking forward to it. And, you know, you just got to get past that period. And then all of a sudden everything just falls into place again. And then before you know it, you're away again.
Yeah. What would you say is your role within the house? I mean, everyone always says, you know, are you the strict one or not? I don't think there's necessarily that line of, I don't think one parent is the strict one. But what are you like as a dad? Because obviously we know you as
disciplinarian. I'm not that. Emily's a disciplinarian, even though she's not strict. We're not strict parents. I like to communicate with my children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like to shout at them. I don't like to scare them. I don't think they should be scared into doing things or fearful into being told off. You know, you should really just sit them down and because that's what I was. I was fearful when I was young of doing things wrong. And you live your life on the edge of the child, you know, and you think to yourself very much.
What do you think has made you want to reason with them? Is it the way that you were brought up or is it your job?
No, because if people sit me down and talk, you know, I'll have someone shout at me all day long and all I'd do is either turn into the Hulk or I just cut it out, because that's what's people have done that to me my whole life, and has no effect on me.
Yeah.
So when people actually sit me down and talk to me and go, right, Ant, this is what, then I take it all on board. You learn from it, right?
Yeah.
Now, rather than just being that shouty, you know, when I do raise my voice, which I do on the rare occasion, then everyone just, you know, everyone's like, we must have done something really, really bad now, you know, and that's because either they put themselves in harm's way or they've done something dangerous that can harm them or the children, or I don't know. It's just what's always been instilled into me. You know, I've always thought that if you sit down with people and talk to them, you know, I wouldn't shout at you if you'd done something wrong. I wouldn't shout at you. So why would I shout at my kids?
Exactly.
I'd say, obviously speak to them on a different level.
Mm.
You know, if you don't do it to everyday people, then why on earth would you treat your kids like that? It doesn't make sense to me. So I just go with my instinct and, you know, sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. But that's parenting, you know.
Well, and sometimes shouting is counterproductive anyway. You're not going to get the best out of anyone.
You see SAS Who Dares Wins and people think, I'm this disciplinarian, but that's the military side of things, you know. We need to install discipline into these guys in 10 days, so that whole this is what you do, this is what needs to be done, you know, that's that whole military mentality. But when I'm at work, I'm used to dealing with life or death, you know. Ultimately, when we go, everything that we train for and we do is to prepare us for war, which is life or death. So it has to be serious, it has to be tuned, it has to be on the ball.
Yeah.
So the moment you make one mistake, you're dead, or someone else is dead, and you've got to live with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's that seriousness of my work life. And then when I go into my home life, I'm completely like one scale, you know, I'm on the other end of the spectrum, because that's who I am. Ultimately, I like to think I'm a nice guy, and you know, but when I'm at work, I work, and when I'm at home, I'm at home.
It's kind of given you a different perspective, I think.
Definitely. And my wife always says, and I say to my wife, she's the only person that truly knows me, because, you know, she says sometimes when I act stupid or I do stuff, she's like, if only your fans could see you now.
Do you feel that pressure, though, of maintaining that SAS guy, you know?
No, I don't, because when I'm at work, that is me.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm at work and I'm doing something serious, like with Mutiny and my survival, it's serious stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it is serious stuff. So when something needs to be done, I'm very regimental. It needs to be done. I'm going to get the job done.
Mm.
And then when I get home, right, I need to be a father. I need to be a good husband as I can be. How do I do that?
Mm.
So That's just me. It works for me.
Yeah.
It works for my family. It works for my wife. And hopefully it will work for my kids.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it is.
Yeah, well, I'm not doing too badly.
I was quite surprised watching SAS Who Dares Wins about how much emotion was in it. I watched it and I did not expect to cry. There's a scene basically where these two twins, one of them picks the other, they spar each other and they can only hit each other in the face, which I think is a bit mean. And I as a mum watching that, I was a bit like, oh, if that was my sons. And you said,
but why did he pick his brother?
There is that. There is that.
Idiot.
But there's parts of the show that I didn't realise, but it would be so emotional. Mm-hmm. And you're saying about emotion. Mm-hmm. And having that military background where it was, you don't cry, you don't show this. But you don't have that rule with your kids. And how... Because obviously you want them to know that emotion is fine. And, you know, we're all now about, you know, you don't say don't cry like a girl. You don't say certain things.
You know, if you've got something that's going on and you need to tell me, then you tell me however you need to tell me, son. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I think there's a fine line. Every time my son gets told off, he cries. No, come on, son. No, we live in a cruel world and we live in a society where nothing's perfect, obviously. So, you know, people are going to take advantage of your softer side, of your emotional side. So I do try and make sure that he controls his emotions.
Right.
I do say to him, right, you're a little man now, you know, you know, have a stiffer upper lip. And that's the way life is.
Do you ever feel yourself, though, when you say like... Because obviously he is getting older. At what point do you kind of go, oh, but I just want to cuddle you and say, are you all right? Or is it just like, no?
All the time. Come on. All the time. No, if I could wrap him up in cotton wool and have him attached to me on a baby harness all day and he's 8 years old, which I don't think he'd like, then I would. But it's like he does Muay Thai, my son. He fights.
Gosh, that must be difficult seeing your kids.
His mum takes him to Muay Thai.
Right.
If he gets hit in the face or if he gets hit... He'll cry.
I would blooming cry.
If I take him to Muay Thai, for example, he'd get hit and he'd take a look and you see his eyes when they look at me and I'd just give him a nod and say, it's okay, son.
Yeah.
Just, you know, use that.
That reassurance.
Harness that aggression and use it, you know. That's life. Don't get me wrong. When my son looks at me, I feel his pain and I'll go, I want to take him out the ring.
Yeah.
But he enjoys it. When he comes out of there, he goes, Dad, you know, yeah, I got hit, but I could, you know, done that. But you see that kick that I'd done. And, you know, if he says to me, Dad, I don't want to fight no more. I don't want to train anymore. There's no way in a million years that I'd push him.
Right.
He enjoys doing it. He loves doing it. And, you know, you get that sort of fear and that nervousness when he comes up to a fight. But when he comes out the other end, he loves it. He wants to get back in the ring. He wants to go back into training. You know, with this day and age, a lot of people say the right things and then they do the opposite. Well,
right.
I don't. You know, I'll say it how it is. And in my heart of hearts, I know that think that I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Then that's
and they're happy.
Matters. Yeah, and they're happy. Yeah, of course. Of course. That's it. That's the main thing. That's all they need. All they need at this age is love and to make sure that they're happy. They don't need anything else.
Do you feel like you're enjoying fatherhood a lot more now?
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Because I haven't got that emotional cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm away, I want to know my daughter, how's she done on horse riding?
Mm.
You know, my son's fight, how did he get on? So I'm always curious on how they're doing. And I always want to hear their stories because that's what keeps me going. I'm like, oh, cool. And the kids are okay. And Emily's okay. And everything's okay at home. The fort's solid at home, you know. So it allows me to do what I need to do and to the best of my ability.
How did you change? Did you feel yourself change when your babies came along?
Do you know what? I don't know if it was a good feeling at first because I felt that whole fear of something could happen to them or not being there 24 hours to protect them.
Yeah.
You know, I think about that a lot.
Do you? Still now?
Yes. And that thought process does come in and it's a horrible feeling to have because you're so protective and you're so... These thoughts kick in every now and then. I think, should I be at home? Or is it fair to leave Emily with all this responsibility? But then you look at life and you think, well, actually, that's life. You know, I've got all this responsibility to make sure that they've got clothes on their back, that they've got a roof over their head, that they're happy.
Yeah.
That's a big responsibility. And in order to do that, you have to have this balance between work and family. That has to work in sync. The moment one crumbles, the other will crumble behind it. They feed each other.
Mm.
And if you can get that right and you can get that balance right, like, I don't go out. I don't, you know, socialise too much nowadays. Or when I do, it's a coffee. I'm quite boring nowadays. But it's because I've got this balance so right and I'm loving life at the moment that I don't want to mess it up. You know, it's working.
It's amazing that you've got the balance. I literally feel like I'm still juggling. I'm a bit like this.
Yeah, but you always juggle. Mould is always moving. There's no set mould. The mould's always moving. But as long as it's within that mould, okay, and it doesn't spill out, this mould is always changing. It's always moving. That's what happens.
Yeah.
You know, things fit into here and this juggling, whole juggling effect, as you said. But as long as you're keeping that juggling effect within that mould, then it works. It works for me anyway. I love my life at the moment because I'm literally bouncing from work to family, work to family, work to family. And I haven't got time for much else. And I'm loving life.
People always say to me, how do you do it all? I'm like, well, I don't see friends and I don't sleep. I know. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's like when I went on Mutiny, you know, after like a week when everyone was just like, oh, I was like, right, guys, let's do that. They're like, where are you getting your energy from? I'm like, I've got four children at that time. I had four children and a baby of 6 months. So that's what gets us into our lifestyle. That's what gets us up out of bed, right?
Yeah.
We don't need an alarm clock, do we?
No, I don't actually know the last time I set my alarm.
Yeah, no.
What time are you waking up in the morning with the kids?
Probably about 5:45.
Same. If it's 5:15, I'm always like, no.
Yeah, no.
But there's no way back.
SAS grip on them. I don't know.
That's the thing, though, isn't it? I think if it's 5:15 wake up, you're just like, it's so close to. But they're not going to go back to sleep.
And you can't nod off, can you?
You can't nod off.
The time you nod off and you get back into that deep sleep, you're just like, oh, no, I've got to get up. So. Don't punish yourself. Don't do it to yourself. Just get up.
Just get up. It's almost like a form of torture. You'd probably say different.
Do you know what it is? That's why probably I made a good special forces operator.
There we go.
I was already trained in it with my 16-year-old.
Do you experience dad guilt at all? Because mum guilt, I think, whatever you do, you experience guilt, whether you're at work, whether you're at home, when you feel like you should be at work, whatever you do with your children, I feel like there is some
sort of guilt. Yeah, I do experience dad guilt. And you know, the whole, I need to go to this event for networking. You're really being a busy fool, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Do I need to be there? Yes, I do, because there's going to be important people there. And if I, you know, I need to mix and I need to show them that I'm keen. But am I getting paid to do it? Is it having an immediate effect on my family life? No, it's not, because it's not paying the bills. It's not, but it needs to be done. So that's when I have dad guilt, you know, when I've got 3 events on the trot and I'm out for 3 nights on the trot and I'm coming in at like 11 o'clock or whatever. And
you know, it's work.
Emily's like, are you getting paid for this? I'm like, no. Are you getting paid for tomorrow night? No. How about Friday night? I'm like, no. So dad guilt does kick in. And but then you get to these events and you realise how important it was.
Yeah.
But obviously Emily doesn't, because she's sat at home or she's doing whatever she's out with. You know, she doesn't realise, you know, the effects that that meeting has had.
And that must be quite difficult, because now you're doing things and they're essentially fun.
Yes.
A lot of the things you're doing are for fun. So whereas you would have been away before and it's not fun, now it's
she
like,
sort of knew I was
in
a conflict zone. She's like, where are you going to go from here? But now, she does. She's like, you're off around the world, you know, doing your thing. And then she might sit on a call that I've got on loudspeaker, or she might read some emails just to keep her in the loop what's going on. And she's like, no, actually, you know, I just had a little moment there, you know. It's but I think it's just communication.
Yeah,
I think that's a big part of a relationship, which I sort of failed for many years, was being able to communicate, because you couldn't talk about what you'd done. You couldn't talk about where you were going, because you couldn't have that security leak.
Yeah.
And I sort of carried that on over. We communicate on a level where we literally just, you know, any little thing that's bothering you, just tell me, because it's probably nowhere near as bad as you're thinking, or it's worse than you're thinking. No, it's never worse. But do you know what I mean? So I think communication for any family is key.
Yeah. And you come from a big family. You have a big family. Mm-hmm. Have you got any tips for people that are maybe going to have big families?
Don't just bring children into this world just to make relationships better, because you think there's something missing. Ultimately, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
I've been there and I've done it.
Well, it's not an easy ride, is it?
It's not an easy ride. And, you know, make sure you're in a good position. Make sure that you can offer these children choices. I'm not talking about 10, you know, I'm talking about a couple of choices in life, or a couple of direct, you know, make sure that you can, you've got enough time and I'd even say, you know, people hate to mention it, but enough finance to be able to bring these children in to give them the best life that you want to give them ultimately. You know, it's not just a case of banging out loads of kids and it's going to sell, because it, you know, before you know it, the kids' lives aren't really enriched. You know, they're missing out on certain things, and because you didn't actually sit down and think about it. So if you're thinking about having a big family, I would say definitely sit down and think about it. And that's what myself and my wife did. That's why we had Shyla and Gabriel, who's 10 and 8, mm-hmm. is because at that time we were in a good place. We wanted two children. And then 6 years later, we found ourselves in another good position. We were like, do you know what? Let's extend the family.
Yeah.
You know, that's the logical way of thinking. And people say, no, just bring kids into the world. They'll change your life. And I don't think like that. If I could have them in my house when they're 30, 40, you know, at this stage in my life, I would.
Right.
You know, I love my kids. Yeah. My daughter says to me, she went, yeah, when I move out, and I'm like, I'm like, say that again. She's like, listen, I'm going to build you a house on my grounds. You'll be fine. I'll build you a little outhouse. You can have your own room, your own.
See, I've read something where you said about not wrapping, we shouldn't wrap people up in cotton wool.
No, we shouldn't.
When it comes to your kids, though, is there an element of you just wanting to go, stay with me forever? Yeah.
I'm like that.
Keep wrapping.
Big reel of cotton wool. That's my inner circle. That's my Garden of Eden as such. Do you know what I mean? That's where I re-energise. I get sort of let out into the world and go and do what I do. Bring what I need to bring back. Re-energise. Boom. That's how very much I look at it.
Yeah.
So a lot of people say to me, Ant, you've just finished Mutiny and now you're going back. You know, you should be resting and you're going back to a family of 4 or 5 when Bly was born. But for me, that is my downtime.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds strange, but then, you know, I've got baby climbing up here. I've got one hitting me with a tennis racket. I've got one that's throwing a football at me, and I'm just like,
Do you go to any baby classes?
No. I do read up a lot about being a parent.
Yeah.
But, you know, I find it interesting that at the age of 7, the 7 first years of their life, or 7, 8, are really important, because when I look at the first 6, 7 years of my life, I had a loving father, really loving. He passed away when I was 5.
Right.
And I sort of had this sort of iron fist stepfather come in straight away from the age of 6 onwards. But if I would have had my stepfather's personality, then I'd probably be this sort of like this ruthless, you know, man's man sort of, like what you're crying for, you know, sort of.
Yeah.
But I haven't. I've got this, me at my purest, and me, you know, reverting back to my personality as this loving adult that, you know, wants to help everyone, that wants to be there, that wants to, and that comes from my father for the first 5 years that he gave me.
Yeah.
And I can remember sort of him in never laying a finger on me. I remember one day I pushed my friend down the stairs and my father came out and he sort of looked at me and he just brought me down to the bottom of the stairs, put us both together and started talking to me, right? Saying, look, you shouldn't be doing it. And it's the first time I thought I was in trouble. And then I look at my personality and how I'm with my kids, that sort of formula,
yeah,
I think it does work, because I think to myself, wow, I've had two different, completely sort of role models in my life who couldn't be more different.
Mm.
But I've always reverted back to my father, who instilled that into me in the first 5 years. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
So it's quite interesting. So,
do you think you use more of your dad in your home life than maybe a bit of yourself?
Oh, yeah.
The other?
Yeah. Do you know what? And, you know, I'm grateful for his time. And I used to flick between the two to do what I needed to do and to get the job done. But now I sort of completely revert back now to this sort of whole humble side has hit me, where I think, you know, 6, 7 years ago, it would have been this more arrogant, big-headed type of, you know, bit blasé, a bit mad type of guy. Yeah, I've definitely gone back to my default setting, which is my father, which is great.
Yeah. So I want you to finish these 3 sentences. Being a dad means?
Being loving, being caring.
I love that. Since having children, I
become a lot softer.
Well, I didn't make you cry, so you're not that soft.
I'm crying now. No, I'm joking. I'm not crying. I'm not crying, everyone.
I'm happy when
I'm with my family.
Well, I don't doubt it. It's been lovely talking to you.
No,
thank you so much for coming on.
No, you're most welcome. Thank you for having me.
Not at all. It's been a pleasure.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.